Hi, my name is Rutendo Nyamuda, and welcome back to another phenomenal, exciting episode of In My 20s. In My 20s? While you're here, please don't forget to like, share, subscribe, and share this episode with your friends and family. Coming up on this episode of the In My 20s podcast, we sit down with a guest who is so inspirational, not just in her personal life, but in her professional life as well. So welcoming herself onto the In My 20s podcast and into the In My 20s family, here she is.
So hi, my name is Yumna Asin. I'm a motivational speaker and a success coach, and I have a really deep passion for helping people and seeing them succeed in life. And I'm also a very quirky person, so a lot of people think of life coaching as sometimes being a little bit too serious, but I love putting in the humor into it. Yeah, so that's me in a package.
Now on every episode of the In My 20s podcast, my guests always come through with these incredible mind moments or gem moments, and this is just one of them.
I remember before I got diagnosed, I didn't yet have the one where I blacked out, but it started with ones like this, where I would hold like a Coke bottle. I remember it so clearly in the kitchen. And then I just randomly just did that, and I wasn't controlling it. Oh. And it just happened, and the Coke bottle flew at my head.
The In My 20s podcast is split up into three sections. In the first section, we get to hear a little bit more about Yumna's career journey. In the second section, we dive into today's topic, which is all about understanding epilepsy. And finally, rounding up all three sections is a conversation on the all-consuming 20s journey. Let's get straight into it. All right, yes. So Yumna, you've mentioned that you are a life coach.
Yes.
And a motivational speaker. How did you get to where you are today? I mean, it's not something that you study. You don't study life coaching.
No.
On varsity level.
No.
So how did you get started?
It's funny because I never ever imagined myself in this sort of field. Like, I was extremely shy, like had no confidence, couldn't even order like pizza on the telephone. Like, you remember that speech I mentioned the other day? And I would give my money to my sister for food, to order in the food court, because I was so shy to speak to anyone. It was really, really bad. And so then I realized something had to change. So I decided to take debating in school. It was a model United Nations, where it's just like the United Nations. You would kind of like choose a country, and then you would have to represent their political views on it.
Oh, wow.
And so it was hard in the beginning. I sucked so bad, but I just jumped headfirst. I'm like, this is the only way. Like, how am I going to become successful if I have no confidence? And then from there, then I progressed, and I went into studying HR in Vassy College. And I really still had that passion for helping people. And then during college time, I met a guy who introduced me to something called network marketing. And that's where I began to find out that I actually have an entrepreneurial spirit within myself. And I just didn't really explore it. And just being involved in that company and selling, which I never thought I'd ever be able to do in my entire life, truly kind of ignited that passion for entrepreneurship and also helping other people.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I sucked so bad in the beginning with that too. I couldn't sell to save my life. But then, you know, the mentor that I had really made it simple, and he said, if you think about it, you're selling on a daily basis and you don't even know.
And in your career, in the work that you do, you're a life coach.
Yes.
And there are so many aspects of our personal lives that we look after. We're going to go to the gym and we'll find a gym coach. We will go to the doctor and find a, I want to say, health coach, because your doctor's looking after your health. But life coaching is such an interesting thing, or interesting concept. So how do you define being a life coach?
I would say I like to use, you know, the analogy that my lecturer spoke about. She spoke about something where she said, just like how you imagined, you know, a horse and buggy back in the day. So imagine the horse and buggy back in the day. It took you from point A to point B. So where you are right now to where you want to be. And that's what a life coach is. It's taking you from where you are right now. And they take you through a journey of, you know, self-development in assisting you to finding what's your deeper purpose mm-hmm. in order for you to get to where you want to be. Mm-hmm. But I always believe that a life coach is just the guide. Just like I said in my previous speech, the client is the hero. You're inviting them into your story and you're just the guide to lead them there because the answers are already inherently within them.
Mm, oh, wow.
Yeah.
And so take me through a typical session in terms of the things that you might ask them or how you would go about developing this journey. Because it sounds very pretty and airy-fairy.
Of course.
You know, it's like, I'm going to go and self-discover and find myself.
Yes.
You know? But what are the fundamentals that you go through?
Yeah. You know, I got to say, when people come to a life coach, you know, a lot of people are not very aware of what life coaching is. And when they do a session with me, they're like, wow, I didn't think this was what life coaching was, because it's very challenging, especially for the person that I'm coaching, because you have to dive very deep into yourself. And one of the exercises that I do with people, and I think I've perhaps mentioned it to you, but I mentioned it to a lot of people, is a very powerful visualization exercise mm-hmm. where we try to discover, you know, a lot of people come to me saying that they're feeling stuck in life. They don't really know what the next step is. How can I make the next move? And so I tell them, imagine that there are three chairs, or if there are three chairs in the room, we actually do it physically, like practically. And I say, so we have three chairs. We have the logical chair, we have the aha chair, and we have the integration chair. So I tell them, you know what, with the issue that you're having right now, you know, you're feeling like you're really stuck. Imagine that we're going to go sit in the logical chair, and that logical chair is going to give you some advice and solutions as if it's talking to you by giving you logical day-to-day advice on what you could do in order to get out of that stuck zone. And then we move it on to the aha chair, which is a creative chair, and you sit in there and you imagine that the chair is giving you creative advice on how to get unstuck. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't really conform the creative chair. It's out of the box thinking mm-hmm. to have the aha moment, the epiphany. Mm-hmm. And then the integration chair kind of marries the best of both worlds. Mm-hmm. It marries the logical chair and the aha chair. And sometimes we even take it a bit further and we say, hey, what's your role model? Mm-hmm. Like, imagine Oprah is coming to you right now. Like, what is Oprah telling you about this? Like, yeah. Oprah, I'm stuck.
Yeah.
And so in the session, like, I tell you, well, tell me, what is Oprah telling you right now? And it's amazing some of the stuff that they come up with. It's crazy, like, how they access these things in their mind,
yeah.
what Oprah might be saying to them. And they're like, I never thought of it that way.
A lot of people feel like you need to go and see someone who's lived, you know, like a long life and,
yes.
you know, is close around their 50s, because they can give you life
yes.
experience from that perspective.
Right.
How are you finding your relationship with your clients who are in their 20s?
Yes. I think it's been really good. And I think there's also a stigma that's attached to life coaching. They envision a life coach as someone that's much older.
Yeah.
And when we think of a life coach, we think of it as someone who's in a midlife crisis that goes to see a life coach.
Yeah.
But I remember watching a video by my role model, Mary Forleo, and she was speaking about, you know, seeking mentors.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of times when we think of a mentor, we need to seek out someone that is way ahead of the game, someone that's done it already, done everything. You know, that's all great and dandy, but she said we're forgetting to look to the sides. There are people that are in the same situation as you are now, and they're actually closer to the problem, and they actually are going through the same thing as you, and some of them have managed to overcome it. So they're closer to that issue that you're going through. So it would actually kind of be better for you to seek out their help,
yeah.
which was so interesting. Because yes, the people that are way ahead have gone through that, but it's very kind of far removed that it's happened many, many years ago.
Yeah.
But people that, like, you're right here with me, we can talk about this. You can give me very valuable advice, you know, and it's more meaningful because I'm able to relate to you in that sense,
yeah.
that the issue and the challenge is closer to you
yeah.
in terms of time.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think that's so powerful that we forget to look on our sides. We
yes.
forget to look at who's in our circle.
Right.
Yo, that's quite something to take in, because to your point, I mean, even within my career, the people I look up to in my career and who I'm like, I want to be like them. Or if I could only get into the room with X, my life would change.
Yes.
But then you get into the room with X.
Yeah.
And then it's like, what are you going to say to them? What are you going to do? Like, what is the conversation? Is all you're going to say to them, thank you for being a role model to me?
Yes.
But it hasn't actually changed you. Like you haven't gotten anything that you can take into the world. But these conversations that we can have side by side, you can say, oh, Retainer, you need maybe help on your social media side. I advise you to do this. Or from a life coach perspective, which you are, have you tried this? The three chairs thing you mentioned, I had not thought of. And that's by our interaction, not something that I read or saw through someone who was years ahead of me.
Right, exactly.
So that's powerful.
We tend to underestimate the knowledge that the people closest to us actually have. Because we're always seeking out, we want the best of the best, the person who's the most famous person to work with, you know. But, I mean, we truly do underestimate, like, the knowledge that comes from the people closest to us. It's amazing.
True. I want to ask through some of our discussions on more of a personal level and a personal note is you suffer from epilepsy.
Yes.
And to be completely honest, you are the only person I know who suffers from epilepsy.
Wow.
And I think from watching TV, sometimes on the screens it says, you know, there's usually a warning sign. If you suffer from epilepsy, this might be harmful to your health.
Right.
But I've never taken account of it because...
Yes.
Again, no one in my life and myself don't suffer from epilepsy.
Yes.
So how would you describe, if you're comfortable to
I'm so open about it.
How, first of all, what is epilepsy?
So epilepsy is basically like there is an abnormality in the chemical workings in your brain, like the, what are they called? The neurons.
Mm-hmm.
They are overly active.
Okay.
And so it's not really all that balanced, you know? So sometimes there's different things that happen in your brain that causes the neurons to be overly active, which then causes you to have a seizure.
Okay.
Yes. And there's different types of seizures. Some people have absent seizures where they're just staring ahead. Their eyes are open, they're fully conscious, but they're actually having a seizure.
Okay.
And then there's the ones that we all know of called the tonic-clonic, or the older name for it was grand mal, where the person falls on the floor and they start shaking and stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, and then there's also ones that are like involuntary shakes, like this. So they're conscious, but they're just shaking like that, and they can't control it.
Okay.
Yes.
What kind of seizures do you have?
I have, it first starts off with like movements like this, and that's when it's like a signal that, hey, you know, you've kind of got to watch out.
Mm-hmm.
And then what ends up happening is I end up falling on the floor. I have the one where, I completely black out.
Okay.
I get out of it and I don't know who, like where I am, what day it is, what happened that freaks me out. And I always wake up crying because I don't know what happened.
Okay.
So it's extremely scary.
Yeah. I can imagine.
Yeah.
And when were you diagnosed with epilepsy?
When I was 10 years old.
Okay.
Yeah, so I've been on medication ever since.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what was your first encounter that you remember? Having epilepsy.
I remember, before I got diagnosed that, I didn't yet have the one where I blacked out, but it started with ones like this, where I would hold like a Coke bottle. I remember it so clearly in the kitchen. And then I just randomly just did that and I wasn't controlling it.
Oh,
and it just happened and the Coke bottle flew at my head and I started crying because I didn't know what was happening to my body and it was happening very often. And that's when my parents decided to take me like for the MRI scans and stuff, and they thought that I would grow out of it, but I unfortunately have not.
And how does it affect your kind of like your everyday life, especially when it comes to work or actually your daily life in general? Like how much has it impacted your life?
I would say it's impacted it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It really has. Like when I was a teenager, it wasn't really that bad.
Mm-hmm.
But then as soon as I exited college, in the past, like 6 years, it's gotten tremendously worse, but gratefully that I haven't had a seizure in the past year.
Okay.
But it kind of got worse where like my period affects it. So closer to around my menstrual period, like I'm more likely to get a seizure. Also a lack of sleep. Okay. And I also kind of get angry at my epilepsy because I'm like, it's the morning time and I'm really, really like, I want to do stuff, but I can feel my brain. It's just not up for it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's like, I'm so tired, you know, like you just can't do this.
Yeah.
Because if I'm extremely tired, I get auras. People who have epilepsy get these auras.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a feeling that you're going to get a seizure. It's like your body warning you.
Okay.
And as soon as
what does that feel like?
So you feel, some people get a sense and taste in their mouth, mm-hmm. of like metallic or something. Some people get like the vision starts changing a bit. Things start... you know, there's visual changes, there's feelings within them, their heart starts racing.
Okay.
And I get like a feeling in my brain saying like, I don't feel right.
Mm.
And I'm not able to concentrate on what you're saying. And that's a warning that you gotta sit down or just lay down.
Okay.
So, I know like my psychologist told me, don't worry about not being able to do the stuff that you want to do in the morning. Utilize the better hours of your day.
Mm.
So that's why I usually start at 11 a.m. and I work till like 8 or 9 p.m. at night, because
okay.
I know that's when I'm most
productive.
There.
Yeah.
So it's been, really, like, not nice to live with when you know that you want to do some productive stuff in the morning and everyone's all there and up and stuff. But
yeah.
I just have to be real with my body and say it just can't be up to that standard,
yeah.
you know. But I utilize other hours of my day, so it's fine.
It's quite interesting in the sense that you never know what other people are going through in their lives.
Yes.
And so... I only know because you told me, or you told
yes.
us, you know? And I think a lot of the time we go through life just looking at other people going like, oh, well, their life is great, like everything's perfect.
Yes.
But again, without having conversations.
Yes.
And even when you do find out, it's like, how is it? You know,
yes.
how is life?
Yes.
And that, because yes, everybody has their own issues and everyone has things, but I think you are able to connect with people better or sympathize or
yes,
empathize with people
so true.
When you know.
Mm.
I can't imagine what you're going through. I can't imagine what it's like to have epilepsy or to be on meds your entire life or knowing that there are certain hours of the day that you're not productive. The mornings are not good for you.
Yeah.
And it's such courage, you know, even for you, like every day, you're like, this is a part of me, but it's not, but you haven't let it defeat you.
Yes.
You haven't let it like impact your life to a point where you're just like, well, I've got it. So, you know, this is me.
Yes.
Again, I would not have been able to tell. There's nothing
yes.
on you that says I have epilepsy.
Cause it's invisible.
Exactly.
Yes, exactly. Like, cause some people are like, wow, you don't look like you have epilepsy. I'm like, but it's invisible. You can't see it. And it's so true. It really opens up your eyes living with it to know that there's people out there that it might be perceived that they have a perfect life, but everyone is going through something. And that's why it's so important to have empathy,
because
you just never know.
That's
like
so true.
It might look all glitzy and glamour on social media, but something else is happening behind the scenes most times.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Sure. And is it genetic, or how does one get epilepsy? How does... I don't know.
So there's still a lot that's unknown about epilepsy. The scientists can't really pinpoint it because, you know, there's also no cure yet.
Mm-hmm.
But there's sometimes it could be like brain damage, brain trauma that caused it. They did speak about something of it being genetic, but they're not very sure. They can't really prove it.
Mm-hmm.
There's some people that have worse cases of epilepsy than others.
Okay.
Some people might have like lesions in their brain. brain that cause them to have epilepsy hour upon hour. So okay. I'm grateful that I don't have it to that point, but it kind of does suck living with it, but it's important to know that it does not define you, you know? And I actually, I'm wearing this watch right now. It's my epilepsy bracelet. Yeah. It's like a smart watch.
Okay.
It's connected to my phone. And if it kind of detects that I'm having like a seizure where I black out, it actually will turn red and go around and give my loved ones a call.
Oh, wow.
And tell them I need help. So it's the Embrace Watch by Empathica.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I didn't even know that existed. That's amazing.
Yeah.
To know that is there, because you could be anywhere.
Yes.
And like have a seizure and just being able to know that people know that something is wrong.
Yeah.
Sure.
So, I mean, if there's people out there, like I'm a brand ambassador for them and I share my stories with them.
Mm.
And this watch gives you so much peace of mind to know that if anything happens, that thing will call and send GPS coordinates of where you are at the moment.
Okay.
Yeah.
What advice would you kind of give to people who may have epilepsy or may have a mental health condition that they feel no one is getting it? You know, I have X, but no one can see it.
Yes.
How would you advise them to maybe approach or, just continue?
Yeah, I would say it's definitely very hard, you know, especially because of the stigma that's attached to, you know, especially mental illness. And I honestly do believe just like you have an ailment or an illness of the body, the physical body, you have an illness of the mind too, but don't let that, you know, make you feel like, embarrassed or anything, but just know, you know, that it is there, but don't try to fight against it, especially like if you're having depression or anxiety. Me living with epilepsy, and I sometimes get anxiety out of nowhere also. It's important that you don't try to fight against it, because the more you do that, the worse it gets. It just gets so bad.
Okay.
So it's important that you try to know that it is there, but try to learn some coping mechanisms and just take it step by step by step, and realize that you've got to have some patience with it, that it's not going to disappear just like that.
Okay.
You know, so just taking, you know, different sort of coping mechanisms, breathing techniques, meditation, seeing someone for help, seeking some help, and just know that if you are just taking some action steps to work your way to get out of it, you are making progress, even if you don't see the results just yet. It's invisible results.
How would you summarize your 20s?
Wow, a roller coaster. Most definitely. I think it hasn't all just been roses and unicorns and it's something, especially in our society today, it's been very fast paced, very unknown. There's things that have happened that I'm so glad to have brought into my life, certain people, opportunities. It's amazing how life works, especially in your 20s, where you think that this is where you're going, especially like when you come out of school, it's like, I've got my life set. I'm going to be doing this, 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 and this. And then as soon as you get out of that and you choose a career, you meet someone or you go somewhere and it leads you in different directions.
Yeah.
But what I like about also, I think the 20s is such a foundational stage of your life to really get to know who you are. And because you're still young, you still have the opportunity to discover what is it that resonates with you. What do you want to do for the rest of your life, you know? And it's kind of like my mom used to always say, like, in your 20s, and especially when you're growing up, it's like, if you're struggling with what it is that you want to do with your life, just throw everything at the wall. And like spaghetti.
Yeah.
Throwing spaghetti at the wall and just
like
for real,
like actually like throwing spaghetti.
Yeah, like throw spaghetti at the wall and see what sticks.
Okay.
You know, it can also be used as an analogy to try different things, you know, because a lot of times people, society preaches a linear sort of career, especially like you do this, you do this, you move up the ladder and whatnot, but as Sheryl Sandberg, who's the COO of Facebook, in her book Lean In, she says that your career is actually a jungle gym. Sure. It's not a ladder.
Sure.
Yeah, because it can go this way, it can go that way, but it leads you to where you are right now. I mean, I truly do believe life says and things happen for a reason, the reason why we're here doing this podcast, because it's opening up doors for you, but you don't really see it yet. It's like invisible results.
Yeah, you know? That's quite powerful.
Yeah.
And then, Yumna, have you ever experienced the quarter-life crisis?
Oh, my gosh, yes.
Okay.
Oh, my goodness.
What was your quarter-life crisis?
Oh, man. I think I actually had it, I think, when I was about 25 years old. Because isn't that, like, exactly quarter-life?
Yeah.
And I had it, and I went through such a bad depression. I remember when I was in school, and the English teacher asked all of us, what is your biggest fear? And everyone said, like, oh, fear of a tarantula, cockroach, fear of dying. I said, fear of losing myself. And then it's crazy because when I was around the age of 25, I saw it becoming real.
Yeah.
I saw myself losing myself.
Yeah.
Which was really, really scary, to be honest. Like that whole, I saw it becoming very real.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, oh my goodness, I don't know what to do with my life right now.
Yeah.
I don't feel like I've found my passion. And I was freaking out a lot.
Yeah.
There was so... I don't want to be a Debbie Downer, but there were so many days where I literally just cried all the time. And usually by myself in my room, because I didn't really want to be a Debbie Downer to anyone else, you know. But it was a process that I know it sounds weird that I'm grateful that I went through, because it forced me to get real with who I am and what is it that makes me happy. Because I've always been someone that wants to please everyone else.
Yeah.
Even to the point of following a career that someone else wants for me instead of what do I want for myself.
Yeah.
You know? So I did go through that. It was hard. It felt like it was never going to end. You know? But I actually saw a psychologist, I saw a life coach, and I saw what they did for me. And that kind of sparked the beginning of, wow, I also love helping people and people who are also in this sort of crisis too.
Yeah.
Because my market is actually a lot of people come to me who are in their 20s who are suffering from a midlife crisis and they want advice on that.
Yeah.
But just knowing it that as hard as it might be right now, there is a light there at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah.
Even though it might be blue right now, it will turn to white.
I like how you said you're grateful that you went through it. Because I think a lot of the times when we're going through the most in our 20s, we kind of want to avoid it.
Yes.
Because it doesn't feel great.
Of course.
And I think I read some sort of a quote that said our bad feelings or supposedly negative feelings that we call want to be felt too.
Yes.
Not just the good ones. Because when you're going through a high, you feel it completely.
Yes.
You're within it.
Yes.
But when you go through a negative emotion, you're so quick to want to let it, like, stop it.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Know?
That's so true. You know, I was, I think we were speaking about that the other day, and I was speaking to someone else about it recently, and it's been a conversation that has come up a lot with people, is the fact that how you embrace your happy feelings, embrace those negative feelings too, because it's actually healthy. As weird as it may sound, it's actually healthy for you to go through those motions.
Yeah. And what advice do you have for people in their 20s in general?
In general,
yeah.
I would say, you know what? It's going to be a roller coaster, but it's an exciting roller coaster. You know, it's kind of like those, just like I said, it's your career, your life is not a ladder. It's not linear. It's a jungle gym. It goes all over the place, but it's those moments of, you know, failure and mistakes that actually grow you the most as a person. That's when you make your biggest breakthroughs in your career, you know, is when you're going through those mistakes, when you're going through all of that. Like, that's when you really make those breakthroughs.
Thank you so much, Yumna, for coming on today's episode of the In My 20s podcast and sharing your journey, sharing what you've been through, sharing what it is to live with epilepsy or have epilepsy. As mentioned, it is one of those conditions that I personally don't know a lot about or enough about, and this has definitely inspired me to read up more on it. To everybody else, I hope you were inspired by this episode just as much as I was. So we'll catch you same time, same place, right here on In My 20s.